One paper opined that a faulty force pump and low water level in the boiler was the cause. Another newspaper...
They don't even know how the boilers work. What the hell are they going to postulate on causes?
Another newspaper reported qualms about the reckless behavior of the boat's officers or the shoddy construction of the boilers. Later,
Ryan,
there was...
listen, I know you have no idea how nuclear reactors work, but tell me how Fukushima failed. Like, I could... That's what this is.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Nah, I'm kind of here.
And Ryan.
Bro, he's cooked.
Put a fork in him. He's done.
Oh my god!
Listen, he is definitely like hardcore, like medium rare right now. If he can get through 1 hour without just kind of like his brain just kind of going completely sideways and thinking totally something different than we're talking about, I would be impressed.
Yeah, that's definitely gonna be happening. Let's see.
Steve just time travels, you know, Shadow of Time style, you know. Just hangs out with the Ithians, reads in their library while some guy's, like, piloting his body.
Oh, my God.
But, I mean, so it is appropriate, though, because it is 420 Eve, so make sure that you leave out weed and munchies out for Santa Claus or Snoop Claus.
Well, most importantly, it is tomorrow is a very important day. It's day of our Lord, Jesus Christ. Our Lord and Savior. So today, boys, we're going to be talking about steamboat
Don't
disasters.
You dare say Adolf Hitler.
Steamboat disasters.
I want to say that just happenstance. I'd learned about a couple of steamboat disasters. And they are very entertaining, and I hope people enjoy them as much as I do, because they're one of those things where I can understand why when an alternative to like steamships came around, that they were just like, yeah, we're gonna do that.
The only one that I know of is like New York.
There's a couple down in the south too, I think.
I forget what the one in New York was.
It's called Steamboat. I think, isn't it?
In history.
Both the ones we're gonna talk about are not in New York.
Okay. Isn't that like the steamboat gambling cruise or whatever? I think Kenny Rogers play on that shit.
Well, they do. They do like
remote cruises. No, it wasn't Kenny Rogers. It was Kenny Chesney. Dog, come on, make it right.
You could do the Kenny Rogers gambler experience in Biloxi.
Oh god! Oh god!
No, I'm just thinking Will Sasso's impression.
I'm Kenny Rogers. Welcome to Jackass. there are dead bodies down here. Oh. So the first ship we're going to talk about, we might only get one ship done tonight, and we can make this a two-parter, because the other one's a little bit longer.
Oh, wait, we're really going to talk about steamship disasters?
Yeah.
This is the time that we let Steve just take off on his autism. So we just stay here and just nod politely.
Okay, go ahead. Hold on. I'm just trying to sit up straight here.
I don't wanna end up in like the T4 program 2.0 that like RFK's cooking, because he's like, they'll never date. They'll never pay taxes.
I will volunteer to be your bunkmate when we get sent to the camps, bro.
No, they're just the T4 programmers, where they just like executed the mentally handicapped.
Can I volunteer? No, this is not a cry for help.
So the Lucy Walker was an average vessel for her time. She was 144 feet long, with a beam of 24 feet, 6 inches, and a draft of 5 feet, 6 inches.
The Lucy Desi Walker.
She displaced 183 tons. She was built at Cincinnati, Ohio in 1843, and her home port was Weber's Falls on the Arkansas River and the Cherokee Nation in Indian Territory, which is now Oklahoma. The boat frequently steamed to both Louisville, Kentucky, and New Orleans, and she was a wide wheeler with 3 boilers, only 1 deck, no masts, no figurehead, and an above-deck cabin.
So it looks like the boat on that movie, Death on the Nile. It's kind only of. One deck, no mass. Okay, yeah.
It's much bigger.
Yeah, it's much bigger. Thomas, it displaced, what was it, 130 tons of water?
183 tons.
Jesus.
Thomas F. Eckert, John Cochran.
What's that in gallons, bro? I don't understand tons.
And Thomas J. Howderman had successfully served as masters or captains of the Lucy Walker. Captain Howderman was a very experienced riverman who, beginning in 1820, had Haldeman? Worked as a fire. Yeah, Haldeman.
Haldeman. H A L D E M A N.
H A L D E R M A N.
Oh, never mind.
This is just his accent coming out. Haldeman.
Say it right.
Why'd you didn't Haldeman. You kind of sounded like Shaggy saying it though. Haldeman.
It wasn't Lord me. Mercy. Bumble cluck.
Yeah, the Ross Club Bumble.
Way too far down that rabbit hole.
I'm the number one Jamaican dandada.
What do you get down the Chet Hanks hole?
Oh, yeah, fucking
all I can think of is fucking half baked. What part of Jamaica? Right by the beach, boy.
Boy.
So Howderman had been a riverman since 1820 and worked as a fireman, deckhand, engineer, and captain on steamboats, and later was a steamboat inspector. For some unknown reason, Howderman was replaced in Louisville. Just before departure, and the ship's owner, Joseph Van, took over the duties as captain.
He was
Cappy Van.
You're not far off.
Really?
Yeah. The Lucy Walker departed the Louisville Wharf at noon on Wednesday, October 23rd, 1844, outbound for New Orleans.
The Louisville Wharf. It went down there over Louisville Wharf. Flowed down there, you know.
Get a water ice.
They were going down there, get a water ice. And then you're going to go over there and you're going to knock off a steamship, you know. It was just on them. I didn't ask them to go. They were up in arms after a Flyers game, you know.
Bro, I heard Jalen Hurts is on this ship.
Have you heard of that Jalen Hurts?
Some of the passengers were perhaps excited about the looming presidential campaign in less than a fortnight between Whig and Kentucky Native Son candidate Henry Clay and Democrat James K. Polk of Tennessee, uh-oh, while other passengers had likely participated in the pre-Churchill Downs horse racing season at Louisville.
All right, Robert Frost, what the fuck is a fortnight?
14
it's like,
days.
It's around it's around 2 weeks.
It's 14 days.
I think it's 14 days, but yeah, it's like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Using poetry vocabulary in this goddamn episode.
You need to step up, bro. It's a convenient term.
At the last minute, a Presbyterian church delegation would come aboard the ship. The Lucy Walker probably avoided the rapids, known as the quote-unquote Falls of the Ohio, by traversing the new Louisville Falls Canal. She then crossed to the northern bank and picked up additional passengers at New Albany, a major river port. At about 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday of October 23rd, 1844, the vessel's engine stopped and she drifted mid-river about 4 to 5 miles below New Albany while some repairs were made. Suddenly, the three boilers exploded in a mighty blast, propelling shards of metal and pieces of human flesh.
Oh, no.
One man was shot 50 feet in the air to fall as a missile, piercing the boat's deck. Another was sliced in half by a piece of a boiler wall.
Jesus Christ.
The vessel then caught fire and quickly sank in 12 feet of the Ohio River. Soon the river was filled with bodies of passengers and crew of the unfortunate Lucy Walker, both living and dead. Many were mangled or burned and survived only by rescue efforts of Captain L.B. Dunham and the crew of the nearby snag boat Gopher, which had been removing underwater obstacles under contract with the U.S. Army topographical engineers.
As fuck, Harry. Well,
so this bitch just went boom.
Boom.
Loss of steamboats by collision, fire, or river obstacles, such as snags, was well understood.
Snags. Boiler snags is my dog. He's up there over there. Snags. I love him.
But boiler explosions seemed arbitrary and mysterious. Ooh, so, one of the funny things about this is that during the period where they're using boilers for like this type of like mechanization, they don't really know exactly how they work, just that they work.
Oh my god! Oh my fucking god, bro! How do you...
immediately after the loss of the Lucy Walker, many newspapers began to speculate on the cause or causes of the explosion.
Stupidity.
One paper opined that a faulty force pump and low water level in the boiler was the cause. Another newspaper...
They don't even know how the fucking boilers work. What the hell are they going to just postulate on causes?
Another newspaper reported qualms about the reckless behavior of the boat's officers or the shoddy construction of the boilers.
Later, hey, Ryan, there was... listen, I know you have no idea how nuclear reactors work, but tell me how Fukushima failed. Like, I could... That's what this is.
Ryan just gives like the presentation from Chernobyl. Like he just like goes through.
Oh my god! I mean, I could bullshit my way through it, but dog, like if you don't know how the boilers work, do not hypothesize what you think failed, bro.
Yeah.
Later, there was speculation that steamboat racing might have contributed to the disaster.
I knew it.
Steamboat racing?
Yeah. Yeah, they go like 6 miles per hour. And, you know, if you get over, you get up to 7, you real scream down the river.
I want to see a steamboat drifting.
they're just doing smack talk in Fast and Furious in the first one.
I think that's one of those valid uses of AI. Just go ahead and type that in.
Steamboat drifting.
Oh man.
The demise of the Lucy Walker was not the worst steamboat disaster in American history, but is among the most deadly. It is possible that more than 100 people died that
this
day.
This fucking topic is so random. Anyway, I'm sorry. It's just fucking funny.
Many steamboats sank because of boiler explosions like the Lucy Walkers. But others, but for instance like the Lady Elgin, sunk due to a collision on Lake Michigan and other causes. The high death toll of steamboat disasters like the Lucy Walker sparked public concern, litigation, and congressional debates about insurance issues, compensation of victims, responsibilities of vessel owners and masters, and the need for state or federal legislation. There were ad hoc local and congressional investigations of individual steamboat disasters, especially those involving boiler explosions. The general public was concerned that steamboat racing contributed to these disasters, but many steamboat captains and passengers were thrilled by the excitement and gambling accompanying the gun. Bro,
we gotta get in on that. Like, why is that not like a game on Steam, you know? Steamboat racing?
That's awesome.
We gotta put that on there, like, right now.
You gotta balance it out so you go fast, but you don't blow up your steamboat.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Much of the problem was ignorance by steamboat operators. In those early days, the physics and mechanics of boiler explosions were not well understood. Designers did not know the tensile, compressive, or shear strengths of metals. Engineers did not know the effects of scaling, mud, or other things on or other things that would affect feed water pumps. Safety valves could be overloaded, and there were few pressure gauges. If there was too low of a water level in boilers, it would lead to the boiler walls getting overheated. Sometimes owners were simply too frugal or greedy to pay for good equipment or competent employees.
motherfuckers.
Imagine a 10-year-old in the boiler. Well, yeah, fuck, I'm like saying that like that's a fake thing. Like, honestly, they probably had 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
Imagine a 10-year-old in a boiler room and being like, hey, fix this boiler. This boiler is responsible for the safety of all the people on this ship. Don't fuck up. And you got this little 10-year-old who's been drinking for like the last 6 hours who's got a family of four to support.
Yeah. Six-pack a day habit.
He's rolling a cigarette. We'll cover it in like in coal dust.
Yeah.
In addition, steamboat safety was an important aspect of the larger conflict between partisans of Andrew Jackson's states' rights vision of America as a federation of strong state governments and Henry Clay's internal improvements program by a strong central government. And an adequate 1838 law was greatly strengthened by the Act of 1852, which included hydrostatic testing of boilers, the establishment of maximum pressures allowed,
right,
and inspection of boilerplate at the point of manufacture.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I voted for that.
In addition, engineers were subject to testing and licensing.
I didn't like that, but I settled for that one, that version.
Subsequent legislation led to the establishment of the Steamboat Inspection Service and eventually a real reduction in fatal episodes. Among the first government sponsorships for pure scientific research was a grant to the Franklin Institute of Philadelphia for the study of the causes of boiler explosions.
Oh yeah, bro, I've been to the Franklin Institute.
The investigation of Steamboat...
Really do you know what the Franklin Institute is?
No.
It's like a college?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's a museum, dude.
Oh, it's a museum?
Yeah.
What does it focus on? Like the?
It's like a science museum. Yeah.
Fan of the science museum.
And stuff.
More than going to like art museums, like sculptures and paintings.
I love art museums.
Science museums.
I'm a total art fan.
I love Ripley's Believe It or Not and like Wonderworks in Orlando, just because I'm a fucking child who like likes a little like stupid experiment gimmicky kind of shit.
I feel you, bro.
I went to the last weekend. I went to the Henry Ford Museum of Innovation in Dearborn.
Yeah.
And it's like an in-depth museum. It's more of just like a things museum.
Man, now you're going to like call shade on that.
But one of the things they have is they have the presidential cars. And I saw the car where Kennedy got his head blown up.
Jesus Christ.
Did you do the magic eye pose? Like you get down and like your ass is poking out and you're just like praying. Oh my god.
I was gonna say it's Henry Ford, so what do you have? Hitler's car?
Exactly.
We did make jokes about seeing his original copy of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, but
that's incredible. Preprint master.
Because when you go in first, you see like the one that like Reagan used. Another car that a shop president was in.
You say Reagan like you're from fucking Southeast Philly. Yeah. You know, the one that Reagan used.
Really, really drawn out that A.
Reagan. He was a classic president. Like, everybody remember old Ronnie.
then there's the Kennedy car, and I'm just like, yeah, this can't be the one that he got shot in. And I looked at the black car, I'm like, oh yeah, this is the one he got his head blown up.
You should have taken a picture, or taken a video of yourself with it, what's it called, that Misfit song? Oh, what is it? Who Killed Marilyn? Yeah. Isn't that it? Yeah. What the fuck is the name of that song?
Anyways, the investigation of steamboat fatal accidents like the Lucy Walker in the early 19th century was paralleled by similar actions taken after fatal crashes of airships and aircraft in the first half of the 20th century, which resulted in the establishment of the Federal Aeronautics Administration, or FAA.
Oh, good.
Another gutted government agency now.
Yep.
Among the dead were General James West Pegram, a lawyer and banker whose sons, General John Pegram and Colonel William Pegram,
Johnny Pegs, would become important
Confederate officers in the Civil War.
Yeah, they douched out.
Pegram was also an important leader in the Whig Party. Also on the ship. What?
I said it's Whig.
Whig?
The Whig Party.
Also on the ship was Special Postal Agent Samuel Mansfield Brown of Lexington, Kentucky. He had been one of the protagonists in a famous frontier brawl at Russell Cave, Kentucky, with Cassius Marcellus Clay, a Louisville newspaperman, emancipationist, and distant cousin of Henry Clay. Dude, when he learned of Brown's...
I'll tell you what, I was just looking at, like, the last, like, 10 episodes and looking at the notes I took, which are just, like, little snippets there and there. Just so I have something to write up and something I could maybe put in the intro. Mm-hmm. And if I just put all these words into, like, a... like some jumble, it would be fucking hilarious, dude.
Jesus Christ.
Because it's the words make no sense together. It doesn't make any sense. It's like Benny Barty Hill, let's go, Vladdy Devox.
I love how Vladdy Devox somehow is creeping into every episode.
Oh, well, I'm back. I was pretty good at basketball. That's like Ghost Meat, Alien Drip, Alessandro Cagliostro. I'm like, what is going on over here?
When he learned of Brown's demise, Cassius Clay noted that Sam Brown was the bravest.
Cassius Clay.
Yeah.
You heard him.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You know that Sam Brown was the bravest of all the many persons Clay had fought during a very combative career. Only two children.
I like that pun. Very combative career.
Only two children and none of the women died, probably because their cabin was farther from the blast than the hurricane deck where most of the male passengers were gathered.
Probably because those children were weak.
Newspapers did not name Van's slave crewman. 36 passengers and 20 crew members were identified as killed in the explosion, and 48 passengers and 7 crew members who survived, with a total of 111 people aboard. The pilot, Captain Thompson, estimated that there were at least 130 travelers, including deck passengers and a 30-man crew, when the Lucy Walker left Louisville. Since the vessel's passenger manifest and crew lists were lost, there's no way to know precisely how many died. The official government certificate issued for the Lucy Walker contained a statement under oath in which Joseph Van swore that he was a U.S. citizen from Arkansas.
I swear, you guys.
This statement, though, was false.
That? Who would say that if it wasn't true, huh?
The statement was, in fact, false.
Have you been there?
He was a citizen of the Cherokee Nation from Indian Territory, once part of Arkansas.
Oh, man, you sneaky fucker.
Van was famous for his great wealth inherited from his father, James Van, including a mansion, the chief van house in Georgia.
Yeah, he was the first van guy, right? Like, he invented the van.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He airbrushed himself on the side.
Yep.
It was known as Rich Joe Van to distinguish himself from a cousin.
Oh, I know Richard Joe Van. Yeah.
Also known as Joseph Tenolte Van,
see?
Who was the assistant principal chief of the Western Cherokees.
Called him Joey Tits.
Because he had a solid B cup.
Joey Tits.
Rich Joe Van was the proud owner of a prize-winning racehorse named Lucy Walker, which he probably purchased in 1839 from an advertisement in the Little Rock, Arkansas.
She didn't win no more. They probably should have called her Lucy Runner instead, you know.
For sale at Memphis, Tennessee, Lucy Walker, 3 years old, by Bertrand Dam Damn Jane Little, now in training, June 12th, 1839.
Yeah, man, you don't.
Damn Jane Little.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not. Nah, no, but what was his name? Lucius Damn Little.
Damn Jane Little.
The filly was one of a not only a frequent winner in quarter mile races, mm-hmm. but also produced many colts that Van sold for as much as $5,000 each. When he purchased the steamboat at Cincinnati, Ohio, in 1843, Van named his new vessel after his favorite horse. It is unknown if the filly.
This year's old is carrot that- farts.
It is unknown if the horse was one of the unacknowledged passengers on the fateful day that the ship exploded.
Of course it was, because they're not going to count animals back then. They don't give a shit back then.
That'd be a cool-ass gang name, but it's too long. You know, the unfortunate passengers of the fateful day when the ship exploded.
In February of 1843, Van advertised his new possession, the new fast-running steamer Lucy Walker, Eckert Master, Little Rock to New Orleans, sheet metal roof, two fire engines, and hose.
Oh, man. February 7th, we got to have hose, you know?
And blackjack. Among,
you need a hose and blackjack.
Among the first passengers of the new Lucy Walker in March of 1843 had been 200 Seminole Indians transported from New Orleans to Fort Gibson, Indian Territory, under charter to the U.S. Army. On March 16th, 1843.
On their way down there to start the first Hard Rock Casino.
Oh, no.
The Indians have been captured in Florida by the Army as part of federal efforts to remove southern Indian tribes to Indian territory.
Sons of bitches.
5 years later, other commercial steamboats have been used by the Army to transport Van's fellow Cherokees to the west as part of their Trail of Tears. In 1835... Van owned 110 African-American slaves at his home, Diamond Hill, at Spring Place, Georgia.
What a piece of shit.
During the looming Cherokee removal crisis, Van was driven from his home by armed gangs of Georgians and shifted his families and properties for a time to Cherokee town of Ultowea in Tennessee, where he built a racetrack.
Yeah, it's still a problem up there to this day, like armed gangs of Georgians. It's just frightening things.
Just marauding the countryside. In 1837, he again moved his business operation to Weber's Falls on the Arkansas River in Indian Territory. There he constructed a replica of Diamond Hill, which was later destroyed by Union troops in the Civil War. By 1842... Rich Joe Van owned several hundred slaves at Weber's Fall, who worked on his plantation, took care of his horses, operated his steam ferry boat, or served as crew for his steamboat, the Lucy Walker. On November 15th of that year, some 25 slaves belonging to Van, Lewis Ross, the brother of then principal chief of the Cherokee John Ross, and other wealthy Cherokees at Weber's Falls, locked their owners in their homes and began a futile flight for freedom, heading for Mexico. The fugitives were joined by slaves owned by Creek Indians, but were quickly recaptured by a Cherokee posse. Van took his rebellious slaves and made them crew the Lucy Walker to separate their quote-unquote bad influence from the other slaves at Weber's Fall. One of the participants in the big runaway was a slave known as Kellett or Caleb Van. In 1937, his daughter, Mrs. Betty Robinson, told an interviewer of the Works Progress Administration, "I was born close to Weber's Falls in the same year that my pappy was blown up and killed in that big boat accident that killed my old master."
Pappy.
The WPA also interviewed other former slaves, such as Lucinda Van, who told a story about Jim Van, an engineer or fireman aboard the steamboat, who was forced by Captain Van at gunpoint to toss slabs of meat into the boiler since the fat was supposed to superheat the boiler water and thus increase steam pressure.
That's what I've been told.
Ban had been drinking. That's it was engaged in a race to New Orleans with the steamboat that had left Louisville with the Lucy Walker.
So they're racing.
It is known from sailing notices in a Louisville newspaper that the steamboat Minerva was scheduled to depart for New Orleans at the same time as the Lucy Walker.
Sounds like a bitch-ass piece of shit steamboat. Minerva.
Fucking nerd-ass steamboat.
Nerd-ass motherfucker.
According to Lucinda Van's account, Jim Van threw in the meat into the heap, into the firebox, and then leaped overboard just before the boilers exploded.
All right, Lucinda, I'm throwing it in.
This is the same story that was told by Robert P. Van, grandson of Rich Joe.
Robert P. R.P. Van.
R.P. Van.
That sounds like a white guy on the Knicks or something. Robert yeah. P. Van.
Hey, guys.
You're 2025 New York Knicks. R.P. Van talked with, but did not name the fireman. Who was black, who was supposed to be the only survivor of the explosion.
How come?
Also killed in the explosion was 20-year-old Preston Mackey, uncle of Robert P. Van and son-in-law of Rich Joe.
Rich Joe? That just sounds like a guy from the hood.
So why didn't he say who the black fireman was?
It's probably racist.
Well, he didn't know, he just, I guess, heard the rumor over time, or the story.
Yeah, so he was racist then, yeah.
Right, racism, okay.
Lucinda Van recounted that an arm of Preston Mackey was recovered, and it was recognized as being his by the design on his shirt sleeve, and placed in an alcohol-filled container and sent to Weber's Falls.
Yo, let me see your sleeve.
Jesus Christ.
There, a doctor would occasionally display his arm for curious onlookers, including Lucinda Van.
That's so fucked up.
Albert C. Koch, a German-born geologist who happened to be...
Is that his name, or is that like a sentence spoken like fragmented English by a foreigner? Albert C. Koch, you know?
Don't just try to just breeze on past that. There,
or is right? that like a full title, like, and you're saying it wrong? Is it Albert C. Koch?
I like how your delivery, Steve, of that was like Peter Stormare and The Big Lebowski. when he says, I will cut off your Johnson.
Give me the fucking money, Lebowski.
But this German-born geologist who happened to be in Louisville the day following the explosion, he was told 106 persons died and many were badly injured or burned.
A lot of people got hurt.
He reported that searchers found shattered body parts of victims on both Indiana and Kentucky banks of the Ohio River, including a severed head identified as that of Captain Van, but the fate of this portion of Rich Joe is now unknown.
That's fucking crazy, man.
It's kind of like John Brown. Like, they don't know kind of what happened to half of them.
Yeah.
The destruction of the Lucy Walker is well documented, but nearly every source contains some contradictions, garbled names, or incomplete information.
Dude, eyewitnesses, from the 1800s, and yet, from the 1800s, we can't, with multiple eyewitnesses, and we can't get a good fucking like nail down exactly what happened with the timeline. But there's also people in this country that believe a book that was written a couple thousand years ago. But we won't get into that.
Eyewitnesses included Captain Dunham of the snag boat Gopher, an anonymous gentleman from Baltimore, the pilot Captain Thompson, and a group of ministers and laymen aboard the Lucy Walker. The latter told about their misadventures during and after the explosion, but somehow failed to notice the mention that the owner of the vessel was an American Indian, that drinking and gambling were present, or that the boat was engaged in a race with another boat.
Yo, that's my boat.
Most of the newspaper accounts also failed to note this aspect of the accident. The owner of the ship was identified in most newspapers as Captain David Van, possibly confusing him with a cousin of that name, who had served as treasurer of the Cherokee Nation. David Van was the brother of the Joseph Tenolte Van mentioned earlier that people confused him with.
Yeah, Joseph Tenolte, Joey Tits.
And when you put them together, they both founded the greatest skate shoe company in the world.
Vans? Various sources, yeah. Various sources provide estimates of fatalities, widely ranging from 18 to more than 100 deaths.
I was a Vans guy myself.
How do you get anywhere from 18 to 100?
I switched to Etnies, though. Remember Etnies?
I switched to Etnies.
Yeah,
I like Vans, but Etnies were much cooler, you know?
Yeah, I'll admit it. I was a Soaps kid. I was
usually
one
had to
weights on my shoes.
Usually had to order Etnies from a catalog.
Yeah.
They had them at
got lucky.
Journeys.
Yeah, if you were lucky enough to have a Journeys, I guess.
Yeah, you had a Journeys. Don't act like you grew up in the middle of nowhere, bro. You had a journey somewhere.
I did.
There's Journeys at every mall in America, or there was.
It and there's some emo chick with fucking goddamn eyeball piercings in there. Like, can I help you?
The dead mall, like 5 minutes from me, has a Journeys in it.
Some fucking bondage pants wearing bitch, you know?
But I'll tell you what, that Journeys, I went there last Christmas for my girlfriend's birthday, or for my girlfriend's birthday.
Did you give her your heart last Christmas?
Close. I mean, they had Journeys exclusive Vans, because she likes Vans. So, and they were like really cheap, too.
I don't know,
so,
man. Journeys Vans sounds like some Chinese Vans. Or something.
No, they're legitimate Vans. It's just like exclusive designs on it and shit like
it's
that.
Real Vans. Cool. It's real.
They're real. They're real. They say off the wall, they're real.
Albert Koch misheard the name of the vessel
Allie
as Cox. The Louise Walker.
Aldo Kochenstein.
Even the date of the accident was frequently been listed in error in many reference works, which have the date as October 22nd and 25th, 1844.
Nah, can't Jesus be. Christ. Impossible.
Only the Cherokee sources note the role of Rich Jovan that he played in the sudden demise of the Lucy Walker and his own death.
Yep. Richie Jovan. He was Napolitan as they come.
All right,
so
Stevie,
basically,
taking...
they destroyed a fucking steamboat because they wanted to win a race.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
It's like the guy that puts NOS in his car has no idea what he's doing, but instead it was just throwing like pig carcasses into the firebox.
I don't know how this works, but I know it works. Here, let me put triple the normal amount of nitrous oxide into this fucking engine.
They told me these were fast pigs. Get it?
Why did my intake manifold just explode? Oh.
If you want to make any kind of like scene like that, like a dramatic scene where they do some stupid shit like that, if you want to make it funnier, just put it to like, go ninja, go ninja, go.
Oh, man. I think the funniest thing is you said like sometimes they didn't even realize like what these, like how the boilers worked. They just know that they work.
Yeah, they just have a general idea of how they work. They're not like sure about like the physics. It's 1842.
I'm
not going to scare you, but there are a lot of medicines like that nowadays. It's like we don't know how the fuck.
No,
most
psychiatric medicines like that. The SSRIs, they don't really understand it.
No, I mean like emergency medicines.
Oh, no, I'm talking about just psychiatry, because like that's a big problem in psychiatry. It's like basically just guessing.
Yeah, but
Steve,
okay,
I need you to make a note, Steve. 38:38. I'm going to the bathroom. So,
like right now,
I need
you
to
should
know
go to the bathroom first before you go to the bathroom.
Yes, I'm going to the bathroom, Steve. So mark 38:30.
Okay. Oh, I can do that. Hold on. There we go. 38:38. Pee break. Ah.
I need to know the steps that you would take to go from, I don't know how this boiler works, but I know my ship will go faster if I throw fucking pig parts in the engine. Like, I need to know how that clicked together.
How the fuck would that even work? How would you go from one to the other? It's just ridiculous.
But they
did it, man, because
go faster.
You know, these were brave men, Ryan. They were brave men. And they did brave things.
Just like the first guy that sucked on a cow's udder.
Yeah. What's this? Milk?
He said, you know what? I'm going to drink whatever comes out of these things when I squeeze them. Brave.
Hey, this man. Milk over here is pretty good. It comes out, it comes right out of his wasset.
There's a lot of stuff that I kind of like. Sometimes I'll like just kind of go down the rabbit hole and start thinking about, right?
Okay, go ahead.
Who looked at a sheep? Who looked at a sheep or like a lamb? It was like, I'm going to shave your fucking hair and I'm taking that. Like,
probably Native Americans, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a guy, you know, we or saw like Jews. A calf going out of cow and it's just like, I want a piece of that.
Yo, let me see what's up. Yo, cow.
I'm just saying, like, you gotta be kinda, like,
yo,
a little
boy.
Bit fucked in the head to think about some of the stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, a certain amount of insanity and all that, you know? It's no big deal, though.
Like, who's a person that was just brave enough to just eat a mushroom to start to hallucinate?
Probably, like, someone like us. Yeah, I'll do it, guys.
Watch your $5, you won't eat that. Oh, really? Watch this.
Yeah.
Science.
Right, back at 41 minutes.
Nah, you just start. You didn't pause, did you? You let it
record. No, I didn't pause.
Right?
I'm just letting you know that.
Oh, I don't care. I might leave the whole thing in. We were just chatting. All right.
So, the next ship we're going to talk about is the Sultana.
That doesn't sound familiar either. Maybe I'm dreaming and it wasn't a
steamboat.
The Sultana was launched on January 3rd, 1863, the fifth steamboat to bear the name.
Sultana.
The fifth one?
Yeah,
why
the,
was fifth it the
fifth
one?
Slut.
It just means like female, like
female
Turkish, I think.
What?
Yeah, but why was it the fifth one? Were they just unoriginal bastards couldn't come up with new names?
Why Turkish? Ugh.
You know, it's the Empress. The vessel measured 260 feet long with 42 feet width at the beam and displaced 1,719 short tons.
Oh, she's big. She is.
About 1,700
tons now. You know what's funny about this is that I've never seen Pirates of the Caribbean, and I was just in the middle of watching it with my wife, and she reminded me that the fucking podcast I was supposed to record took me like 15 minutes just to make it over in my chair. And you're talking about ships.
As you were falling over stuff.
Oh, dude, I'm like, there's levels of this shit, right? Ryan knows, and I'm like goblin walk high.
Oh, boy.
Like, where you're walking across the carpet, and you're kind of just creeping, because you're chilling. Just making sure. It's ridiculous.
Jesus.
You know, I'm not at the, like, holy shit, am I breathing in the right cadence high? You know, like, remember each breath position high. But I definitely goblin walked. Anyway, it's weird that you're talking about ships. That's all I'm saying, you know? And like ships fucking colliding and shit.
That a 7-foot draft. Her two side mounted paddle wheels were driven by four fire tube boilers.
Nah, you know who's a better 7-foot draft though? Shaquille O'Neal. You know, I'm just gonna say. from LSU.
Introduced in 1848, they could generate twice as much steam per fuel load as conventional boilers. Each fire boiler was 18 feet long and 46 inches in diameter.
Wow.
And contained 24 5-inch flues, which ran from the firebox to the chimney.
Hey, give me some 5-inch flues, love. Put it on me, Tam.
Oh, it's a proper flues.
Oh, there's some flues in there, boys. Light it up. Let's get going.
The power of the boiler came with risk, though, because water levels in the fire tubes had to be carefully maintained at all times.
sounds like what you just said, water levels in the fire tubes, sounds like an explicit instruction in like some weird video game. You know, make sure you maintain the water levels in the fire tubes. Okay.
Steve, this will be in our boiler racer game.
Boiler racer game.
That's the same theme song of Cruising USA, but instead it's...
Cruising USA, bro. What a crucial pool, bro. Fuck it. Do you remember that fucking game, Ryan?
Yeah, I do.
Did you play a lot of it?
I did not, but I do remember the game. My buddy across
that is the next thing. Dude, hurry up and end this one. I want to go play that on my emulator that you can't buy anymore in America, so it's probably worth $1 billion now because the company's no longer shipping to the U.S. because of the fucking
tariffs. Steve, you'll have to trade that to get across the border soon.
So. Oh, my God. Yo, I got this emulator, bro.
I've told ChatGPT.
Ain't got no ROMs on it, but here you go.
Steamboat races in the vein of Fast and Furious, so there you go. It's in the chat.
That's fucking great. I'm using that. That's the photo for the episode. I'm saving it.
The areas between the many flus clogged easily, especially since dirty.
Yeah, that's how flus these are, love. Hey, clog right up.
Especially since dirty river water carried a lot of sediment and were difficult to clean. Low water levels could cause hot spots leading to metal fatigue. I'm going to start a
whiskey company, and that's what we're going to sell. Dirty river water.
I love that dirty water.
Which significantly increased the risk of an explosion. Since most steamboats of the time were constructed of lightweight wood covered with oil-based paint and varnish, fires were a significant concern.
Your mother's constructed a lightweight wood.
So not only do they not completely understand how the engine works and it could explode if they do something wrong, the boat is like covered in flammable material.
I mean, there's got to be somebody who didn't stop at some point during the process of building this boat and be like, guys, you guys know we're just making a bomb, right? We're just making a bomb that floats.
Then I just find that guy lying like dead in the river. Under the command of Captain James Cass Mason of St. Louis, the Sultana left St. Louis on April 13th, 1865, bound for New Orleans. On the morning of April 15th, she was tied up at Cairo, Illinois, when word reached the city that President Abraham Lincoln had been shot in Washington, D.C. Immediately, Captain Mason grabbed an armload of Cairo newspapers and headed south to spread the news, knowing that telegraphic communications with the southern states had been almost totally cut off because of the recently ended American Civil War. Upon reaching Vicksburg, Mississippi, Mason was approached by Captain Reuben Hatch, the chief quartermaster at Vicksburg, with a proposal. Thousands of recently released Union prisoners of war had been held in Confederate prison camps in Cahaba near Selma, Alabama, which was the original capital of Alabama, and Andersonville, south of Atlanta, Georgia, and had been brought to a small parole camp outside of Vicksburg to await release to the northern states. The U.S. government would pay $2.75 per enlisted man and $8 per officer to any steamboat captain who would take a group north.
Oh, no way that's going to go wrong.
Knowing that Mason needed money, Hatch suggested that he could guarantee Mason a full load of about 1,000 prisoners if Mason would agree to give him a kickback.
1,000?
Yes. This will be important.
1,000? Mason, no way that 1,000 is designed to carry 1,000 people. What?
Mason quickly agreed to Hatch's offer, hoping to gain a lot of money through the steal.
Check it out. Hold on, he doesn't understand.
Did you already tell me how many passengers can be on this boat? Because there is no fucking way that this boat is going to carry 1,000 people.
I am not. We're going to get
45 billion.
Oh, God, dude. Are you telling me that this thing's going to be like, up, yep, you can hold 150 people?
All I'm going to say is it's going to reach like Indian train levels of passengers.
Do you doubt her, sir?
Leaving Vicksburg, the Sultana traveled downriver to New Orleans, continuing to spread the news of Lincoln's assassination. On April 21st, the Sultana left New Orleans with about 70 cabin and deck passengers and a small amount of livestock. She also carried a crew of 85. About 10 hours south of Vicksburg, one of Sultana's four boilers sprang a leak.
Oh, no.
Under Under reduced pressure, the steamboat limped to Vicksburg to get the boiler repaired and to pick up her promised load of prisoners.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
While the paroled prisoners...
So, guys, we're going to shove a bunch of people on this floating bomb that is now starting to go off.
Even before they got on, like, the ship's already, like... You know, like, they do in cartoons where, like rivets are, like, flying out of it, like, steam's releasing.
It's, like, red. It's, like, flexing in and out.
Yeah.
Like, you hear it going, choo!
While the parole prisoners primarily from the states of Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee, and West Virginia were brought from the parole camp to the Sultana, a mechanic was brought down to work on the leaky boiler.
Leaky boiler.
Although the mechanic wanted to cut out and replace a ruptured seam, Mason knew such a job would take a few days and cost him his precious load of prisoners. By the time the repairs would have been completed, the prisoners would have been sent home on other boats.
Hmm.
Instead, Mason and his chief engineer, Nathan Windtrigger, convinced the mechanic to make temporary repairs, hammering back
the bulging motor. Who the fuck's not going to listen to a guy named Nathan Windtrigger?
Hammering back the bulging, the bulge boilerplate and riveting a patch of lesser thickness.
It wasn't Windtrigger and it was Windtrigger, then, you know, that's a completely lower class dude.
Dude, instead I'm of in shock and awe at the fucking repair job that you just described for a boiler on a steam, but go ahead. Yeah, no way this ends badly, but go ahead.
Instead of taking 2 to 3 days, the temporary repair took only one.
Guys, listen to me. If everybody tells you the repair is going to take a week, and you got some fucking dickhead who's like, listen, I'll do it in 8 hours. Don't go to him.
Wow.
Don't go to him. Just repair it the correct way. Sorry you lost your money, bro. Sorry.
During her time in port, while the repairs were being made, the Sultana took on the paroled prisoners. Although Hatch had suggested that Mason might get as many as 1,000 released Union prisoners, a mix-up with the parole camp books and suspicion of bribery from other steamboat captains caused the Union officer in charge of the loading, Captain George Augustus Williams, to place every man at the parole camp on board the Sultana, believing the number to be less than 1,500.
I think it is. I think it's less than 1,500, sure.
Although the Sultana had a legal legal capacity of only 376 passengers.
I'm sorry. Back the fuck up. You just said 376 passengers?
Yes.
Oh my God. This thing is like barely above water.
By the time
the deck is just taking on water when it hits these little itty bitty waves. It's just barely.
By the time she backed away from Vicksburg on the night of April 24th, she was severely overcrowded with 1,950 paroled prisoners, 22 guards from the 58th Ohio Volunteer Infantry, 70 fare-paying cabin passengers, 85 crew members, for a total of 2,127 people.
Oh my God, it is 7 times what it's supposed to be. There's no way this goes badly.
Many of the paroled prisoners have been weakened by their incarceration and associated illness, but managed to gain some strength while waiting at the parole camp to be officially released.
These people never see the videos of the European soccer stadium just collapsing with everybody jumping on them when they're overloaded.
The men were packed into every available space, as all cabin spaces were already filled with civilian passengers. The overflow was so severe that in some places the decks began to creak and sag and had to be supported with heavy wooden beams.
Why the fuck wouldn't they say, get off the boat, there's too many of you?
The Sultana spent 2 days traveling upriver, fighting against one of the worst spring floods in the river's history.
Jesus.
In some places, the river overflowed the banks and spread out 3 miles wide. Trees along the riverbanks were almost completely covered, until only the very tops of the trees were visible above the swirling, powerful water. On April 26th, the Sultana stopped at Helena, Arkansas, where a photographer, Thomas W. Banks, took a picture of the overcrowded vessel. The Sultana subsequently arrived at Memphis, Tennessee around 7 p.m., and the crew began unloading 120 tons of sugar from the hold.
That'll help a little bit, I guess.
Near midnight, the Sultana left Memphis, leaving behind about 200 men. She then went a short distance upriver to take on a new load of coal from some coal barges, and then at around 1 a.m., started north again. At around 2 a.m. on April 27th, 1865, when the Sultana was about 7 miles north of Memphis, its boiler suddenly and violently exploded, killing many people instantly.
Jesus.
First, one of the boilers exploded, followed a split second later by two more, because there's actually four.
Oh my God, there's a picture of this boat. There's a picture of it overloaded. You can see it. I'll put it in the chat for you guys.
A massive steam explosion came from the top rear of the boilers. It went upward at a 45-degree angle, tearing through the crowded decks above and destroying the pilot house. Without a pilot to steer the boat, the Sultana began drifting as a burning hulk. The explosion flung some deck passengers into the water and blew a gaping 25 to 30-foot hole in the steamer. With the boilers blown to pieces, the twin smokestacks fell, the starboard smokestack fell backward into the blasted hole, and the port smokestack fell forward onto the crowded forward section of the upper deck, hitting the steamboat's bell as it fell. The forward part of the upper deck collapsed into the middle deck, killing and trapping many in the wreckage.
Mm.
Fortunately, the sturdy rails around the twin openings of the main stairway prevented the upper deck from crushing down completely into the middle deck.
Upper decker.
The men located around the twin openings quickly crawled under the wreckage and down the main stairs.
Ugh.
Further back, the collapsing decks formed a slope that led down into the exposed furnace box.
Check this slope out. Totally exposed.
I'm going to use Y equals MX plus B to find the slope of the line you crossed.
That's the slope intercept form, you know? That's what I'm going to use.
The broken wood caught fire and turned the remaining superstructure into a raging inferno.
Raging.
Survivors panicked and raced for the safety of the water, but in their weakened condition, they soon ran out of strength and began to cling to each other. Yep. Whole groups went down together.
Good God.
Ugh. Why would they go down the Sultana, on each other like that?
Well, the Sultana burned and the
I'm gonna let that go.
If you think about it, I didn't say anything wrong, right?
No. Yeah, look, you're the worst guy. Technically correct.
Get ready for a warrior monologue.
Oh, here we go. I can't wait. Let me hear it. Lay it on me, Sid.
You know, they clung together. You know, queering doesn't work.
That's men going down
on each other.
What a terrible man.
While the Sultana burned and the men on the steamboat were either already dead or fighting for their lives, the southbound steamer Bostana, built in 1860 but coming downriver on her maiden voyage after being refurbished, arrived at around 2:30 a.m., a half hour after the explosion, and rescued scores of survivors. At the same time, dozens of people had floated 7 miles downriver.
How many is the score? Is that like 20, 22?
Yeah. What? Yeah.
At the same time, dozens of people had floated 7 miles downriver.
Wait, really?
And began to float.
A score is 22?
No. A score is 25, I think.
No, because he could have just said a century then, if that's the case.
He said 47 years ago in 1864.
Yeah, he could have said a century and seven. A century and some dwarfs. Why would you say 40 if you could just say a hundo?
A score is 20.
There you go.
It'd be 50.
But at the same time, dozens of people had floated 7 miles downriver and began to float past the Memphis waterfront, calling for help until they were noticed by the crews of docked steamboats and U.S. warships, who immediately set about rescuing the survivors. Eventually, the hulk of the Sultana drifted about 6 miles to the west bank of the river, burned to the waterline, and sank at around 7 a.m. near Mound City in present-day Marion, Arkansas,
you know how
about 5 hours after the explosion.
I just had a conversation in my head, like I made up a joke, I would say, because I'm always thinking of jokes, and I laughed at the conversation in my head while you guys were talking. That's how high I am.
Amazing.
You're literally, dude. All right, go ahead. My bad.
Other vessels joined the rescue, including the steamer Silver Spray, Jenny Lind, and Pocahontas, the Navy ironclad USS Essex.
Pocahontas was an expensive ship. USS they had to pay Disney for the rights.
Passengers who survived the initial explosion had to risk their lives in icy spring runoff of the Mississippi or burn with the boat.
I live just to freeze. Fuck.
Many died of drowning or hypothermia.
Look out for some survivor- hypothermia. Do you remember that song?
No.
Oh my god, I will find you guys. Oh shit. Well, I forget the guy's name. It was the, you remember the squirrel? Do you remember the squirrel meme? Where it's like, and we...
Yeah. That guy. That was my
favorite. I think it's, his name's Three Brain. And he had a website, and he... Yeah. And he had,
what's it called? Gonads and Strife, that's what it was called.
Gonads and Strife, yeah. And he had one called Hypothermia, and it was just this picture of kids swimming in a pool. It was like old 80s, like, movie effects. Dude, it was so funny. That guy was insane, by the way.
Some survivors were plucked from the tops of semi-submerged trees along the Arkansas shore.
Why?
Bodies of victims continued to be found downriver for months, some as far as Vicksburg.
Down.
Many bodies were never recovered. Most of the Sultana's officers, including Captain Mason, were among those who perished.
And then all down on the river.
The exact death toll is unknown, although the most recent evidence indicates that 1,169 people died. Meanwhile, Steve's like cutting off his sleeves.
Tied a bandana around his head.
Steve's wife is like talking him down from cutting the sleeves off his shirt while he starts ranting about the stone pony.
Get a pack of Marlboro Reds in his front denim pocket.
Can't stand that fucking park.
On May 19th, 1865, less than a month after the disaster, Brigadier General William Hoffman, Commissary General of Prisoners, who investigated the disaster.
Sounds like a Nazi. General Hoffman.
Reported the overall loss of soldiers, passengers, and crew as being 1,238. In February of 1867, the Bureau of Military Justice placed the death toll at 1,100 people. In 1880, the U.S. Congress, in conjunction with the War Department, reported the loss at 1,259 people. The official count by the United States Customs Service was 1,547 people. In 1880, the War Department placed the number of survivors at 931, but the most recent research places the number at just 263.
Wow. That's a lot
less. The dead soldiers were interred at the Fort Pickering Cemetery, located in the south shore of Memphis. A year later, when the U.S. government established the Memphis National Cemetery on the northeast side of the city, the bodies were moved there. Three civilian victims of the wreck of the Sultana were interred at Elmwood Cemetery in Memphis.
Uh-huh. That's how I got to Memphis.
Walking to Memphis?
That's how I got to Memphis.
Because Union forces had captured Memphis in 1862 and turned it into a supply and recuperation city, numerous local hospitals treated the roughly 760 survivors with the latest medical equipment and trained personnel.
Check this shit out, dog.
Of this group, what's there that? Were only 31 deaths.
It's called a Band-Aid. You don't have to bleed no more.
Between April 28th and June 28th.
You cannot bleed.
Newspaper accounts indicated that the residents of Memphis had sympathy for the victims despite the ongoing Union occupation. The Chicago Opera Troupe, a minstrel group that had traveled upriver on the Sultana before getting off at Memphis, staged a benefit performance.
Say minstrel
performance
or menstrual?
Minstrel. Minstrel, bro. Okay. Like tampon.
Like a menstrual group? Like a women's suffragette group or something? Like,
yeah, they did the vagina monologue. So
Oh my god.
Well, the crew of the gunboat Essex...
The only menstrual group I know is on that The View, you know?
I'm going to tell you a story from when I was in seventh grade, okay? I'm in Earth, Space, Science, the class, right?
Dude, pick a fucking topic, all right? There's three things there.
Right. So we're talking about...
Fuck, are you some kind of genius boy?
And they're talking about plate tectonics. And as the little table that I'm at...
As a fan of that band.
It's Technotronic. At this table, and I'm taking notes for the group, and I write down platex, tectonics, like the tampon cup, right on the paper. The girl sitting next to me looks over. She goes, "Are you serious?" I said, "Serious about what?" She goes, "It's not platex tonics, Ryan. It's plate tectonics." Look,
while your feet are stomping and jamming, pumping.
Oh, God, I had never felt more dumb up at that point in my life right there. I mean, I've done stupider shit since, but, you know.
Dun, 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 pump up the jam.
But the, yeah, the
1 hour and
the...
6 minutes, he almost made it. He's way too high.
Nah, I'm good.
The crew of the gunboat Essex raised around $1,000, the equivalent of $20,541 in today's money.
That's a lot of fucking shkarol, you know?
In December of 1885, the survivors living in the northern states of Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio began attending annual reunions, forming the National Sultana Survivors Association.
Fuck it.
Eventually, the group settled on meeting in Toledo, Ohio. Perhaps inspired by their northern comrades, a southern group of survivors, men from Tennessee and Kentucky, began meeting in 1889 around Knoxville, Tennessee.
You know who else is from Toledo? Colonel Maxwell Klinger.
Both groups met. Yeah, they got a statue for him. Both groups met
Jamie
as close.
Farr from MASH.
Both groups met as close to the April 27th anniversary date as possible, corresponded with each other, and shared the title National Sultana Survivors Association.
Sultana.
By the mid-1920s, only a handful of survivors could attend the reunions. In 1929, only two men attended the Southern reunion. Next year, only one man showed up.
Goddamn. Womp womp.
The last Northern survivor,
janitor.
Private Jordan Barr of the 15th Michigan Volunteer Infantry Regiment, died on May 16th, 1938, at the age of 93.
Yo, why you talking shit about my boy Jordan, huh? Mm-hmm.
The last of the Southern survivors and last overall survivor was Private Charles M. Eldridge.
That's all you Southerners is. That's all you is. You just survivors. Killed the rest of you, motherfucker.
Of the 3rd Tennessee Cavalry Regiment, who died at his home at the age of 96. On September 8th, 1941, more than 76 years after the disaster. The official cause of the Sultana disaster was determined to be the mismanagement of water levels in the boilers, exasperated by the fact that the vessel...
What is wrong with these boilers? My God.
They don't know how they work.
They probably put those over... You know, they probably did that over to Schuylkill, not over there in Trenton, New Jersey. They put a good boiler.
They don't know how they work.
Exasperated by the fact that the vessel was severely overcrowded and top-heavy. As the vessel made her way north following the twists and turns of the river, she listed severely from side to side. Her four boilers were interconnected and mounted side by side, so that if the boat tipped sideways, water would tend to run out of the highest boiler. The fire is still going against the empty boiler, created hot spots. When the boat tipped the other way, water rushing back into the empty boiler would hit the hot spots and flash instantly to steam, creating a sudden surge in pressure. This effect of careening could have been minimized by maintaining high water levels in the boilers. The official inquiry found that the boilers exploded because of the combined effects of careening, low water levels, and the faulty repair made a few days earlier.
So literally this entire thing could have been mitigated by just adding more water to the boilers.
Pretty much.
Unfucking real.
A 2015 investigation into the cause of the disaster.
That's 2015. Yeah. All right, listen, give it up. It's 2015. I need y'all to move
my
on.
My man,
else.
Give it up.
The principal engineer of Hartford Steam Boiler Inspection and Insurance Company, which came into existence in 1866 because of the Sultana explosion, determined the three main factors led to the disaster.
In 2015?
Yeah, but it's the company that was essentially designed to investigate this type of thing.
Gotcha.
The type of metal used in the construction of the boilers...
So wait, a company that came into play in the 1800s?
Yeah, in 1866.
And was still around, was still extant in 2015?
Yeah, I think it's still around today.
For that specific job?
Originally, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I'm assuming now they do like everything, right? Then,
yeah,
yeah, they got a subscription now. You know, get your boiler van mode.
The type of metal used in the construction of the boilers, which was charcoal hammered number one, which tends to become brittle with prolonged heating.
Motherfucker one.
sounds like a goddamn cologne.
Sounds like a part of
perfume.
It does. Yeah.
Fucking
you
perfume.
Know, I thought it kind of sounded like a
one.
Yeah. Charcoal number one. It's great.
The blood comes in a bottle that's as black as a bottle for Drakkar Noir.
No, charcoal number one sounds like a crafting item in an RPG or something. Mix the charcoal number one with the angel's soul.
Charcoal hammer number one was no longer used to manufacture boilers after 1879.
Yeah, that's because they found out about steel number three.
He's like, what's her name from My Cousin Vinny? That's because charcoal number one was no longer made, okay? It was no longer used in boilers in 1979.
The use of the sediment lay in Mississippi River water to feed the boilers. The sediment tended to settle
innocent.
On the bottom of... The sediment tended to settle on the bottom of the boilers.
That's what sediment does, Steve.
Between the
flues
and leave heat spots.
You said sediment, not floatiment.
The design of the boilers, Sultana had tubular boilers filled with 24 horizontal 5-inch flues, being so closely packed within the 48-inch diameter boilers tended to cause the muddy sediment to form hot pockets, and were extremely difficult to clean. Tubular boilers were discontinued from use on steamboats flying the lower Mississippi after
that was
two
great,
more steamboats.
Great album, tubular boilers.
That's the shit you woke up to at 3 o'clock in the morning on the infomercial.
Tubular boilers was like the follow up to it. You know, everybody loved Bell so much they'll definitely buy boilers, and they're there, and like nobody's buying the CDs.
After two more steamboats with tubular boilers exploded, it was discontinued. In 1888, a St. Louis resident named William Streetor claimed that his former business partner, Robert Loden, confessed to having sabotaged the Sultana by the use of a coal torpedo while they were drinking in a saloon. Loden, a former Confederate agent and saboteur who operated in and around St. Louis, had been responsible for the burning of the steamboat Ruth. In support of Loden's claim, what appeared to be a piece of an artillery shell was said to be recovered from the sunken wreck.
What?
However, Loden's claim is controversial, and most scholars support the official explanation. The location of the explosion, from the top rear of the boilers and far away from the fireboxes, tends to indicate that Loden's claim of sabotage of an exploding coal torpedo in the fireplace below the front part of the boilers was pure bravado.
Listen, all of y'all, it's a sabotage.
Thomas Edgeworth Courtney, the inventor of the coal torpedo, is a former resident of St. Louis and was involved in similar acts of sabotage against Union shipping interests.
Normally it's hot, okay? You're going to chill it till it's cold, and then you sell it as a coal torpedo.
What the fuck is a coal torpedo?
It's essentially a thing that's disguised as like a big thing of coal, but it's got like gunpowder in it. So you like shovel it. You shovel it into the boiler, and it blows up.
Okay, that just sounds reckless.
Yeah.
However, Courtney's great-great-grandson, Joseph Thatcher, who wrote a book on Courtney and the coal torpedo, denies that a coal torpedo was used in the Sultana disaster. 2 years earlier, in May of 1886, came a claim that Second Lieutenant James Worthington Barrett, an ex-prisoner and pastor on the steamboat, had caused the explosion. Barrett was a veteran of the Mexican-American War and had been captured at the Battle of Franklin. He was injured on the Sultana and was honorably discharged in May of 1865. There is no apparent motive for him to have blown up the boat, especially while on board. In 1903, another person reported that Sultana had been sabotaged by a Tennessee farmer who lived along the river and cut wood for passing steamboats. After a few Union gunboats filled up their bunkers but refused to pay, the farmer supposedly hauled out a log, filled it with gunpowder, and then left the lethal log on his woodpile. As stated in a 1903 newspaper article, the log was mistakenly taken by Sultana.
It's the last place anyone would look.
However, the Sultana was a coal-burning boat and not a wood-burning boat.
Oh, no.
Womp womp.
An episode of the PBS series History Detectives that aired on July 2nd, 2014, reviewed the known evidence, thoroughly disputed a theory of sabotage, and then focused on the question of why Sultana was allowed to be crowded to several times its normal capacity before departure. The report blamed Quartermaster Captain Reuben Benton Hatch, an individual with a long history of corruption and incompetence who kept his job through political connections. He was the younger brother of Illinois politician Ozias M. Hatch, an advisor and close friend of President Lincoln. Throughout the war, Captain Hatch had shown incompetence as a quartermaster and incompetence as a thief, bilking the government out of thousands of dollars. Although brought up on court-martial's charges, Hatch managed to get letters of recommendation from no less reputable personages than President Lincoln and General Ulysses S. Grant. The letters reside in the National Archives in Washington, D.C. After the disaster, Reuben Benton Hatch refused three separate subpoenas to appear before Captain Speed's trial and give testimony. He died in 18...
Republican?
Yeah.
He died in 1871, having escaped justice because of his numerous high place patrons, including two presidents.
Oh, two presidents?
Yeah, Grant.
Grant. Ulysses S.
Despite the magnitude of the disaster, no one was ever formally held accountable. Captain Frederick Speed, a Union officer who sent the 1,950 parole prisoners into Vicksburg from the parole camp, was charged with grossly overcrowding the Sultana and found guilty. However, the Judge Advocate General of the United States Army overturned the guilty verdict because Speed had been at the parole camp all day and had not personally placed a single prisoner on board the Sultana. Captain George Augustus Williams, who had placed the men on board, was a regular Army officer, and the military refused to go after one of their own. Captain Hatch, who had concocted a bribe with Captain Mason to crowd as many men onto the Sultana as possible, had quickly quit the service to avoid court-martial and then had gone into hiding. Captain Mason of the Sultana, who was ultimately responsible for dangerously overloading the vessel in ordering the faulty repairs to her leaky boiler, had died in the disaster.
Good, at least he went down with the ship.
In the end, no one was ever held accountable for what remains the deadliest maritime disaster in United States history.
Dog shit. Well, in 1980, kind of held responsible, and that's why he got clapped.
In 1982, a local archaeological expedition led by Memphis attorney Jerry O. Potter uncovered what was believed to be wreckage.
Jerry O. Potter. I found a boat.
Blackened wooden deck planks and timbers were found about 32 feet under a soybean field on the Arkansas side, about 4 miles from Memphis.
I'm sorry, under a soybean field?
The Mississippi River had changed course several times since the disaster,
that's how
leaving the wreck under dry land and far from where the river is today.
Really? It changes where it is?
Yeah, and then the Army Corps of Engineers in like the 30s, like they like dammed it up and like locked it up so it's like stays where it essentially is.
But before the 30s, the fucking river moved?
Yeah, it would move. Like if you lived on the river, like a lot of the people who like have houses like close to the river, they're usually on stilts. Like
one day sort of like on property, the next day nothing.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
In 2015, on the 150th anniversary of the disaster, an interim Sultana Disaster Museum was opened in Marion, Arkansas, the closest town to the buried remains of the steamboat across the Mississippi River from Memphis. The museum is only a temporary museum featuring a number of relics from the Sultana, such as shaker plates from the boat's furnace.
Sultana relics? You sure that's not a magic card, my dude?
Yeah. We all love Arabian Nights, Steve.
Okay? I love it. I put four of them in every single deck I have. It's my steamboat deck. I put four Sultanas in there. It's great.
A few pieces of wood and some small metal plates. I fuck shit up at
the nerd conventions. It's great.
The museum also features many artifacts from the Sultana Survivors Association.
Like what?
As a 14-foot wood model replica of the boat.
That's pretty big. That's almost 15 feet.
One wall is decorated with the names of every soldier, crew member, and passenger on the boat on April 27th, 1865.
Impossible.
One whole fucking wall.
Impossible.
2,867 million names.
It's not efficient, you know? Like, you can't have that many.
It's just the Vietnam wall in the middle.
Good God. Good Lord, bro.
A new state-of-the-art permanent museum, which will be housed in a renovated auditorium gymnasium.
Dude, it's expected to open, all right?
In September, between sometime in September to October of 2025. Monuments and historical markers to the Sultana and her victims have been erected at Memphis, Tennessee.
Sultana and her victims sounds like something an Australian person says, you know?
Marion, Arkansas, Vicksburg, Mississippi, Cincinnati, Ohio, Knoxville, Tennessee, Hillsdale, Michigan, and Mansfield, Ohio.
Oh, we're getting some thick lists, Ryan.
He sounds like Flavor Flav, like listing off cities at the end of...
It's been a few minutes, yeah.
Harder than you think.
Hey, yo, Flavor, check this out.
Yo, Chicago, hey, yo. This Chicago, Illinois, we coming to you next to Cleveland and Cincinnati, Ohio, we coming in next.
Oh, man.
First off, fuck you guys, and second of all...
What? God bless, Flavor Flav. This is a big up for you, bro. Big up.
It's just that meme that how we used to have a show where we would compete and the prize was Flavor Flav.
Flavor Flav. <Boy.
laughs> And Brigitte Nielsen was the winner.
Bro, Flavor Flav is a fucking cultural icon and a untouchable piece of just royalty in this country. Will not denigrate his name.
Wait, they didn't, though.
Didn't? Huh?
He didn't denigrate.
What? No. I'm just throwing it out there.
Oh, okay, good.
That man is royalty.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you had the balls to walk around with a clock on your fucking... And a clock the size of the third grade classroom clock around your fucking neck...
Yeah, and word is he wouldn't give people the time, you know?
shame.
Not even Chuck D, you know? His own friend. Oh,
fuck.
All right. Well, on that note, boys.
Wait, well, that's it? There's got to be, like, at least 10 more Steamboat accents.
Oh, God.
Those are the two biggest ones, Steve. So we're at an hour. We're close to an hour and a half, so we're going to cut it there.
All right, he said he's got another big one next time.
He's got one loading up in the chamber there, doesn't he, boys? All right. Okay, later.
This was just the appetizer for the main course.
Okay, fuck off.
The main course next episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's when the Seminole Hard Rock Casino Steamboat tragically went down.
Chances you can't talk about winning.
James Billy. He's not go dead. Down.
All right, good night.
Good luck. Bye.